Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My name is Matthew Lopez, and you're listening to 11, the official theater podcast.
Hello, and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. The mastermind behind one of the greatest pieces of theatre, his 2018 epic, The Inheritance, directed by Stephen Daltrey, fused generations of queer theatregoers into a story that is spoken of even today. Not settled with making his mark just on the stage, now he's turning his hand to the world of directing as he joins Prime Video's blockbuster and much-anticipated movie release of Red, White, and Royal Blue. So here, in an exclusive conversation just days before the global release, we discuss stepping into a new world with Prime Video for a queer-focused story that's about to grip the world, and how he's proudly embracing the original book while adding his own magic to this telling. Plus, we discuss fan theories, why he's hiding from social media, and we find out if Good Gay Shit is the best review he's had so far. And with the genius in full flow, we reflect on the creative and deeply personal joy of mounting The Inheritance, his involvement in Broadway's Some Like It Hot, and what it's like working alongside legends including Uma Thurman, Vanessa Redgrave, and Mariah Carey? As far as episodes go, this is the one I've waited for. So let's step into the genius mind and world of Mr. Matthew Lopez here now on this, the next episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To ensure the safety of all involved in this episode of 11, Matthew and I connected for this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. Please help me welcome to this, the next episode of 11. He is the history-making and record-breaking Tony and Olivier-winning writing star of the theatre world that's turning his genius mind to Prime Video and the much-anticipated release of Red, White, and Royal Blue. So may I say a very big hello to Matthew Lopez. Hi, how are you?
I'm really great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. Now, you when we were just talking a second ago, there's two things that I need to do in this conversation. So we're going to see how we can seamlessly put them in. So let's go for it from the start. So number one, nice hair.
Thank you very much. I mean, we worked a long time on getting it looking this nice today.
Obviously, this is a podcast, so people just have to believe me, but it looks very cute. So we'll go along
with
that.
You have to trust. Yeah. Just believe that I look fantastic.
Yeah, he looks hot. So we'll go with that. And the other one, we're going to see how long it takes for that to come in. So let's see how long it takes to see. I'm sure it'll be pretty obvious when that one happens. But just to say thank you so much in advance for agreeing to do this. And I mentioned about the fact you've had such phenomenal success so far in your career. So to have something so extraordinary and exciting and really, really, really sort of the anticipation is huge with this release with Amazon. I mean, we'll talk about specifics in a second, but where are you at in terms of like excitement, nerves, anticipation, desperation for it to come out? I mean, what's happening in your mind right now?
It's all of the above. I'm really proud of the movie. I'm really excited to share it with people. I have spent the last 2 years of my life working on this film. And a lot of people have put a lot of their great time, talents, and energies into the making of it. So yeah, it's ready to be seen. That said, I am a person in the world with access to social media, and I think I'm going to hide under a duvet for the entire weekend that it comes out because, here's the thing is that we're sort of hardwired evolutionarily to sort of like ignore praise and seek out the opposite. So, but most people also aren't playwrights and filmmakers. So if you actually add that level of neuroses to it, it's terrifying. But I think it's terrifying in the same way that like walking a tightrope is terrifying, which is like nobody walks a tightrope unless they actually want to, you know? And so I kind of feel the same way about it. I hope people like it. And if they don't like it, they really shouldn't tell me about it.
Well, I hope that you do look online. I hope you do look on social media and just to have a sense of the real excitement that's around. Like, it's on the top of everyone's list to watch. People are talking about it. People are dissecting it in a way that I love. I love the fact it's creating these conversations. But do you?
I do. I mean, look, you know, you'd be a fool not to want to create. It's more than buzz, right? It's like, it's genuine passion. I think it really does come down to the book, to be quite honest with you. I think that the book does engender genuine passion. People love the book. I love the book, or else that's really why I made the movie. Was I read the book and I was so obsessed with it that I had to be the one to make this film. I like to think of this as like the world's most expensive bit of fan art, you know? I mean, like, you know. So yeah, I share that. And I think it's really, really cool that that the fans are in the process of taking this ride with us, because it was made for them by one of them, you know? So I think it's fun. And honestly, like the fun thing is like listening to theories that people have about it that have nothing to do with the truth. And like, you know, and just sort of like knowing that you know more than anybody else at this moment about what's in the film or why certain decisions were made of the film, and listening to these theories, they're, it's fun. I mean, it's in lieu of the actual thing, I think it's a fun thing to hear people just sort of like wonder what could possibly be on August 11th.
But you are also going to have to listen to the fact that you are going to open this massive can of worms for people thinking, well, I thought this, but then this happened. But then what about this? What about this? Like, it's going to create so many more conversations. You've got to be ready. Okay.
Why do you think I'm hiding? I'll let you tell me what they're saying. The thing is, I think coming from the theater, I have this experience of sharing something with an audience and then getting to take it back every day and tinker with it and then putting it back out into the world. And even when we get a not so receptive audience one night, the actors can regroup and come back the next night and try again. With a movie, it's done. It's the same. You're gonna see the same movie that my mom's gonna see, that some stranger in Poughkeepsie is going to see. There, you know, it's the same movie and everybody has access to it simultaneously. And so you really do sort of have to let go. You really, like, I didn't have to let go entirely of The Inheritance. I could swing by and give notes. With this, I'm really letting go of it, you know? And it belongs to the people who see it. It doesn't belong to me. I mean, legally, it literally doesn't belong to me. And now even creatively and artistically, it doesn't belong to me anymore. It belongs to the people who see it.
How long did it take for you to say, right, okay, I really can't change it anymore. There's really no going back on. There's really no tinkering with it. Because I imagine, as you say there, there's always something you could change, right? Because it's dependent on your mood.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, well, it helps when you have a post-production supervisor telling you you're done. And you don't get that in theater. You know, there is a funny thing that happens. I don't know. I suspect it's pretty common for playwrights and hopefully for filmmakers, where you just turn that part of your brain off. I can actually watch the movie now and I'm done. I put my Crayolas away and I'm finished. I have that ability when I see one of my earlier plays. I don't rewrite as I watch. So it does happen naturally, I think, that you finish.
Was it a natural progression then for you to want to go, right, let's direct something, let's step into this world? Because you're,
you know, I could see you cringing a little bit when I was doing the introduction of like all of these amazing accolades coming away, but they are truth. They are things that have been bestowed upon you. They're successes that you've rightfully earned. So when you have a legacy, does it make you go, right, I want to do something completely different? I don't want to continue in this direction because I've done that. Or is that actually your comfort zone? I guess how much of an easy yes was stepping into the world of directing for you? Because I know it took 100 pages for you to go, yes. But then when you go, right, I'm going to do it, you've then actually got to do it. So that's quite a big task to mount, right?
You have to be passionate about two things. A, the story you're telling, or B, the amount of money you're being paid to tell it. and for this, this was for me the most passionate storytelling endeavor since The Inheritance. Like, it's very different from The Inheritance. I could not have gone through the years and years and years of work on The Inheritance if I didn't need to tell that story. And it really was the same thing with this. I really, really needed to tell the story. And everything becomes easier when you really want to be doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you really, really feel this urge. And it never occurred to me at the time that I was doing something that was so stylistically different. I knew I wanted to make movies. I'd wanted to make movies since I was a teenager. This was my first chance to. I had been looking for projects, and then this book came along. My agent actually sent it to me thinking maybe I wanted to turn it into a stage musical. I read it and I was like, well, let's talk about the movie. And I really like it. It really, really spurred on my ambition. To the degree that I'm involved with it, I willed it into existence. The fact that the movie was going to be made is beyond me. The movie was going to be made, right? Yeah. For me, it was, I want to be the one to do it. And I know that that comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility because I'm the one holding the bag when it comes to decisions that are made of what's in the movie, what's not in the movie, how you make the movie, what the movie ends up being. You know, when you're a playwright, you can always blame the director. When you are the director, there's very few other people left to blame. And luckily, I feel I'm in a place right now where I have no one to blame. And I'm really, really excited for people to see the work that all of us have done in service of putting this movie together.
Were you trying and mindful of the fans and the book and the fact that people have perhaps their own preconceptions of what this world is starting off? Or is this you trying to say, I'm going to honor that, but do what I want to do? I guess, how do you bridge that gap while also giving something really exciting for an audience to watch in a different medium away from a book, but this time in a film?
Look, the thing that makes the book special is the thing that makes the book special. And those are the things that you obviously want to put into the movie. Those are the things that cause you to want to make the movie. For me, it started and ended with those two characters, Alex and Henry, as characters. Like, that's the first thing, right? I'd be sent to storytelling jail if I didn't include the cake. I'd be sent to storytelling jail if I didn't include the V&A scene. You know, there's things that you're just like, you'd have to be a fucking moron not to put into the movie, right? And then we can start to have conversations about, the other things that are or are not in the movie. And then it really does become what is best for the movie. And as the director of the movie, my responsibility is determining what's best for the movie. And everybody is going to have very different opinions about what's best for the movie. And I really, really had to listen to those other opinions very sparingly, because at the end of the day, it's my name is the one up there. I'm the one who's going to be taking responsibility for it. So I was left with great partners in this, but also with the ultimate responsibility of saying this is what this thing is going to be. And for me, the most important task, beyond like the obvious highlights of the story, is Alex and Henry. It was always about Alex and Henry, first and last. And for me, what was most important was this challenge that I gave myself, which was, a movie is not a book. You are going to take a different journey than the book takes throughout a lot of it, because that's just the inevitability of the art form. Can I end the movie having delivered the same emotions that the book delivers? Can I create something that allows the audience to feel exactly the same way they felt when they closed the book for the first time, when they finished that book for the first time? Do we end up at the exact same place? And that was the goal. And the journey there, that's called adaptation. That is called making a movie. And those decisions are my decisions my responsibility, but also then my prerogative as well, right? I stand by it, and I'm proud of the film. And I when I showed it to Casey McQuiston, was the most nauseous thing I could ever do in my life. Like, I was more nervous to show this movie to Casey McQuiston than I was ever to like do a first preview of The Inheritance or any other thing. You know, like, I'll sit through 2,000 Tony Awards with my heart in my throat before I have to show a novelist the film adaptation of their work. And sitting in a dark room with Casey McQuiston watching it together was one of the most harrowing and then ultimately one of the most joyful experiences of my life. So I'm very proud that it passes the Casey McQuiston test, and then we'll see from there.
Does that always happen where there's like the writer and I guess the director? Is there always that conversation? Is there always like that official, okay, like you sort of throw it at them and run away and hide and hope? Like, did that happen with The Inheritance, for example? Did Steven say, I hope you like it? Or was like, is that something that happens more in film?
With The Inheritance, I was there every step of the way with Steven. Steven insisted that I be, as a matter of fact, I remember very vividly one morning when we were in rehearsals at the Young Vic, I decided to take the morning off to do laundry and to catch up on rewrite. I think we were working on part two, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna catch up on some part one stuff. And it was like 10:20, I get a phone call from the stage manager saying, Steven wants to know where you are. And I'm like, I'm at home doing laundry. And she's like, Steven would like you in the room. Can you come in now? And like, so there was never a moment in The Inheritance where I wasn't there for the birth of it, you know, and the creation of it. There was something really, really exciting, actually, in many ways of going off and making. But I also, you know, I was given the great sort of honor of being trusted by Casey. Like, Casey really gave me a lot of leeway. And I think that I also know Casey well enough to know that if Casey didn't like the movie, I'd know it.
Yeah.
Casey is not a shy. Casey is a lot of things, but a shy ain't one of them. And so, like, if Casey hated the movie, we would all know it. We would all know it, and we would all, I would be having a very different summer than the one I'm having. You can believe it when Casey says that they like the movie.
I'm fascinated by this sort of almost unspoken relationship between like writer, director. Obviously, then you introduce the cast into it, and also the fans. Like, I had such a great conversation with Christopher Nolan last week about Oppenheimer and how much of a huge part the fans play in what happens on screen, directly, indirectly. At what point is does the handover happen? Does it become a them thing, not a him thing? Like, and I'm fascinated by this.
Movies, especially popular entertainment. And it's funny to live in a world in which Oppenheimer is popular entertainment. That is a miracle, right? That is a miracle. It's for the audience. Like, you know, I'm not making beau travail here. I'm making popular entertainment with this thing. You have to think about the audience. You can't pander to the audience. You cannot pander to the audience. You cannot give them what they want because it'll make them like you. That is where you fail. If you pander to the audience because you just want them to like you, you're going to fail. But you always have to have audience in mind when you're making something like this. It comes everything from the pacing of the thing to, you have to be able, as a playwright, and now I've learned as a filmmaker, you have to make yourself willfully ignorant of the story that you know so well. And you have to sit there and watch it like you're watching it for the first time. And you have to be very honest with yourself. Where's a dragon? Where am I getting ahead of the story? Where am I confused? All those things. It's for the audience. It's for the audience. Other movies are not for the audience, and those are great movies too, but it's for the audience. It's for them. And so you have to take into account what it's like to be in the audience receiving this story.
I was having a look at some of the social media sort of buzz and like the comments on the posters release and like the trailer release. And just, I'm always curious as just to see how people interpret stuff. What sort of audiences is it attracting? What sort of people is it attracting? And it's a very varied, inevitably, with it being such a mainstream release as well. It's obviously got a very varied audience. But one comment just commented, it just said, it's good gay shit. And I really liked that. And I wondered, is that
fair? I think it's accurate? On a poster. It's good gay shit. Yeah, it's good gay shit. I'll take it.
Is it true, though? Would you describe it as good gay shit? Is that a good synopsis?
Good gay shit is in the eye of the beholder, I guess. I've longed for it just, you know, to be seen as good gay shit. Maybe what they mean by good gay shit is it you know, like the book, which was, you know, our Bible in many ways, it delivers on what what we want to see in queer storytelling. I hope that's what they mean by that, and I hope that's the experience that they have when they see it. I certainly wouldn't spend 2 years of my life making gay shit that I didn't want to see. But I mean, we all have our opinions. So, you know, hopefully the good gay shit contingent is robust.
Also, I was going to apologize for saying the word shit, but you did say fuck earlier, so therefore you lose.
You listen, you warned me that I could say it, and you warned me that you might say it. And the only way I got you to say it was by quoting me. So, have I lost or have I won?
I'll meet you in the middle. How about that?
Yeah, fair.
Okay, deal, deal.
This episode is made possible by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough outcomes. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you thrive. It's all part of The New Equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
There's no escaping the incredible names and actors and talent that you have in this. Was it just a monopoly of the who's of who you just wanted and dreamt about? And I presume, judging by this cast, everybody said yes.
I mean, everybody who I wanted to spend a couple of weeks in last summer working with said yes. There was a two-pronged approach to the casting. There is the let's go out and really do a very thorough search for some people who are maybe new to most audiences. And then there is the who would we be lucky enough to get? And for me, with Uma especially, like that was dream come true. And there was a list, and we whittled that list down very quickly with the very simple question of, would you vote for this person for president? And that took a lot of people on the list. But Uma stayed near the top of that list. Getting Stephen Fry was an absolute dream come true. I didn't actually think Stephen would say yes. That was a very much of a Hail Mary. He was our first, and it turned out our last offer on that role. I genuinely didn't think he would say yes. I was like, well, let's waste a little time offering it to Stephen Fry, and then we'll figure out who we are going to end up working with. And Stephen said yes almost immediately. The boys, that took a long time. That took a lot of seeking out, but it was worth the time because I can't imagine this movie without either Taylor or Nick in it. I try to imagine other actors in it now that I don't have a movie to make. And yeah, I genuinely can't.
When you have people of this stature working on your material, working with you as a collaborator, does it elevate you to do more, to want to be more, to strive for more? For example, you've got the phenomenal stars in this, but you've got so many people you've worked in your career. I mean, personal hero Vanessa Redgrave will always be the ultimate for me, but like, it's not every day you get to play with people of this stature creatively.
The simple answer is yeah, obviously the first day on set with Uma Thurman, you want to make sure you've upped your game. I hope I treated every actor on set as if they were as important as Uma Thurman, because that's how you get really good work out of people. I think that, you know, if you create an environment that feels warm and welcoming and loving and fun, you'll get that work out of them. And that's what this movie needed. I needed an incredibly happy set in order to pull this off. I needed people to want to be there every day. When we were putting it all together, my line producer he said, we've got a no pricks policy, no pricks. Everybody's nice. And like when we were working on all of our, you know, we were staffing up, we'd get a list of names and I'd like, what about him? And he goes, he's a prick. And I'm like, all right, take him off the list. You know, we had a no prick policy across the board. And it really was like a very loving, loving environment that set. You know, all it takes is one person to not agree to have a warm and loving environment. And you can really, really, it can sour very quickly.
Yeah.
And that never happened. Everybody was just sort of like jolly and really happy to be there.
And I suppose that will reflect on screen because the work is better because they're creatively in a better position, right? So it's a collective success all round.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if all of my like approaches to the filmmaking process on this movie would behoove me if I was making like a serious, serious drama, you know? Like, I don't know if the Barbie set was as fun. I don't know if the Oppenheimer set was as fun as the Barbie set. Maybe not, but that's okay too. You know, look, I was taught by Stephen Daldry, and I was taught by Tom Fontana, who's one of the great TV creators in America. You treat people with respect, they'll do good work. I mean, it's as simple as that, you know? And if you have a serious set because you have got a serious movie, fine. If you've got a fun set because you've got a fun movie, fine. But if you treat people with respect and you give them the opportunity to succeed, they will.
Definitely.
And if they don't, you fire and replace them.
That sounds like a threat or more of a promise. So
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm very conscious of time, so I've just got a couple more questions. I just wanted to pick your brain as this genius in the world of theatre and just talk about queerness. Okay, you're terrible. Have you ever done anything good? Is that a better approach?
Yeah, that's better. I like
okay,
that.
Okay, fine. We'll go with that one. I wanted to mention Some Like It Hot because you've had this extraordinary success with it. And of course, you've got Mariah Carey on board now, which is just the queen of camp. I mean, everything you touch seems to just bring in campness and gayness, which I love. So please don't ever stop doing that. But for you... banking and Tony nomination for that, for the success that it's had, the fact that it's bringing queer people and non-binary actors to the stage to get them the opportunity to be seen. I mean, I always want to say, are we still moving forward? It feels like the most basic of questions, but do you feel the shift, even from The Inheritance on Broadway through to Some Like It Hot, are we still spinning forward?
I think so. I mean, look, you're also talking to someone who is 46 years old, who when I was a baby gay, everything, what little queer content I had was about death and dying. You know, every message that I got while I was in the closet as a teenager was that I'm gonna die of AIDS. Like that was what I was fed, right? So you got to understand the perspective that I'm taking it from, which is I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is a fucking bonanza, wonderful, wonderful queer storytelling. But I can also imagine being 21 years old and looking at it and going, huh, not nearly enough. And I think we're both right, me and the 21-year-old, we're both right. I think for me, it looks amazing from this perspective. For a 21-year-old, it's probably not enough. And I think I would probably err on the side of agreeing with the 21-year-old that it's not enough. Better than it was, for sure. But better is not the same as great. So I like great. And so, but I also just sort of think that means, like, you know, if in my lifetime it has exploded so much, and it's actually really even not just in my lifetime, it's been in the last 5 to 10 years. If that continues at the rate that it's going, then I think that we have a shot of getting there.
But great is better than good, and good is better than something, which is what you said at the start, which shows that there has to be progression there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, also, you know, great is better than good is the least, you know, profound thing I've ever said in my entire career. And I'm so proud that you actually thought to quote that of all the things that I've said in this interview. Great is better than good. Slap it on a bumper sticker. Matthew Lopez, you heard it here first, folks. Great is better than good. Gee whiz, really, Matthew? Who knew? Thanks for clearing that up for us. And thank you, William, for really sort of underlining that for me.
Good gay shit. I told you, we're going with
good gay shit. You know, really, at the end of the day, it's all some good gay shit.
I'm so sorry. I promise that won't be the thing that we run with. I promise we'll do.
God,
nice
if that's
other
the
stuff.
Title, if that's the title of this episode.
Someone once said to me, "I ask really good questions," and that it was a really moving, in-depth conversation. I don't feel like you're going to say that from this. So I'm quite sad about that.
Can I be honest with you?
Of course.
You can back me up that I look fabulous right now. Like
good hair.
Great hair. I'm actually having fun, which is probably dangerous for me right now, actually, if I'm being honest with you. Very dangerous.
Well, fun is good. I'll go with fun rather than good gay shit, which good gay theatre shit, that's what I go for. But most importantly, congratulations. Please look at social media. Please embrace the fact that people are going to go wild for this. And please just enjoy this crazy ride because you've earned it. It's really extraordinary.
I think on August 11th, I'm going to watch Oppenheimer twice in a row with maybe a Barbie chaser in between. And hide.
Matthew Lopez, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. It was real fun. Thank you, Mike.
You've been listening to 11, the official theatre podcast. Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.